Welcome to the 1 Minute Apologist podcast. My name is Tim. I'm here with Dr. Bobby Conway, and we are going to be talking about Bobby's story going into doubt, walking through doubt, and coming out on the other side of doubt.
Welcome to the 1 Minute Apologist.
1 Minute Apologist.
Apologetics seeks to give credible answers to curious questions,
to give a defense.
Well, Bobby, a few years ago, you wrote this amazing book called Doubting Toward Faith, The Journey to Confident Christianity. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about how this book came about?
The book really emerged in my life after a long bout with doubt. It's funny, Tim, when I became a believer, I was trying to get two questions answered. What do I do with my guilt, and what's the purpose of my life? I was 19 years old when I gave my life to Christ, just about 20. And getting saved at that stage, not having an idea of different worldviews out there, I really wasn't sure what I believed. I just felt like there was a good God out there. I didn't know who God was. I didn't know what to latch onto. I was confused about, you know, just my place on this planet. And I had collected a lot of guilt through some, sinful living. And I was very discontent in my life. And when I became a Christian, you could say I really didn't even know what questions to ask. I knew the most important ones, right? Like, what do I do with this guilt? And fortunately, those questions got answered in the person of Jesus. But I also had a voracious appetite for learning and growing. And as I began studying and learning and reading about my newfound faith, I, on the front end, was handed a lot of beliefs. And I think that's the way discipleship often works. You just kind of told, this is what the church believes, and you don't know otherwise.
Right.
And I said, okay. So I kind of took these beliefs that were handed to me, and depending upon which church you become a member of, you might get handed a short list or a long list. And you're in a church with a long list of different beliefs and particularities that they hold to. Well, if you're a thinker and if you're strong-willed, if you're a creative type, you're not going to do good in a tight little box. And I have all that, you know. I mean, I the creative side of me is always thinking outside of boundaries, and the strong-willed side of me is just like, I'm going to figure this out. And then I just I have that appetite to learn, analytical. And so that combination of left and right brain would eventually create a lot of my own questions. And I'd say they didn't arrive for a while. I'd say I was probably a Christian for about 6-7 years in studying and learning. But when I got into my late 20s, I started to struggle with the synoptic gospels, wondering how you work out some of the details. And I would work through that, and there were different ways that I processed that. It got to a point where it was pretty rough, right? I became a Christian trying to answer those few questions. And then I went to Bible college to learn about my Christianity. Then I did a master's in theology to learn about the Bible that I learned in Bible college. And then I did doctoral studies in apologetics, where I did my D-Min to understand my theology. And then I was driven to philosophy to help me with my apologetics. And then in the waters of philosophy, you know, getting into the PhD there, working into the different questions that were posed there, I found myself going back to the basics. And we can talk about that, but I can say it got so bad at certain points that I felt like I was literally hanging by a thread. I didn't want these doubts, but my brain was producing questions faster than I could track the answers down. So somewhere along the line, I realized while apologetics is helpful and philosophy is helpful for me, my brain produces questions faster than I can track the answers down. Mm-hmm. And for every book that I read to get answers to my questions, I learned 10 other books that I needed to read. So I was in this OCD obsessive relationship with my doubts, and I was locked in, and it began to create emotional turmoil. And so what I had to do is I had to really realize that tracking down answers to all my questions is not going to be the solution to my doubts, because I'll never do that. Coming to terms with my finitude, coming to terms with the questions that I can answer, and knowing what questions I need to let go, these were some of the things that I began to wrestle with. And it was so painful, Tim, that I was in talk with leadership about it. My wife saw me looking out into space practically for 3 years, times I didn't want to be alive. I didn't know if I was going to be an apostate. It was horrific. I ended up incredibly depressed. I mean, it was thick. And the reason it was so thick is because it was so meaningful to me. I mean, I was the guy that my life was wonderfully changed. I mean, this was the real deal. I mean, I lived my faith. I mean, I was, you know, I did the 40-day fast, man. And I mean, I knew what it was like to pray 3 hours a day. I knew what it was like to share the gospel on a daily basis for certain seasons of my Christian life. I mean, I was so committed. But what was happening is I took my addict personality from just constantly being driven to live around my addictions and stuff to now full throttle Christianity. And at some point, my obsession and my addictive type personality, my Christianity became really lonely because I was thinking about things that people weren't always thinking about in the church. And that was scary.
Like what? What were some of those things that you were thinking about?
Well, I mean, you talk about writing down questions. I was thinking about questions that I didn't feel comfortable bringing up with the flock because it was a lot of pressure for me as a pastor. I felt like, man, my job's to help strengthen their faith. And if I go out to lunch and breakfast with the leaders, they haven't had the academic training that I have had. And I don't want to just start listing all the questions that I'm struggling with. I saw what it was doing to my wife. So I didn't have the capacity to track down all the questions that I had because every time I sought to track down and answer a question, I just collected more questions. But my wife, for example, she didn't have even the tools that I had to know how to go about doing the research. So it was hard for her. Like I can remember in our marriage, she's like, honey, I can't handle you sharing this. So it got lonely because I didn't know who to turn to really say, these are my questions I'm struggling with. And so that's where I kept going toward more of, apologists that had doctorates that could have been there. I knew they struggled with this stuff. Mike Lacona was a very good friend of mine through this doubt. He also has been very open about his doubts, asking Gary Habermas questions, and he's written books on doubts. I feel like some of these people have experienced lots of this stuff. And I think the types of doubts, yeah, you could say things like the synoptic problem that I struggled with, and I found that I did come out of these doubts with stronger answers and being strengthened as an apologist. What I had to do is to renegotiate my faith stance. I had to realize that, oh, I wasn't forced to look at this issue as tight as it was presented to me as an early Christian. Here's an alternative way to look at this, or maybe this isn't even an essential. It was just presented as that to me. Some of the types of things, though, Tim, I'll tell you where it would work on me. World travel. I would be traveling and I'd be in the 1040 window in India, or I would be sitting around a lake in England and seeing just Muslims everywhere. And my brain would be thinking, are these people going to be in hell forever just because they've never been given the information piece of the gospel? So I would take that, because notice my question was rooted in the way that I understood that viewpoint.
Right.
But I'd have to work through, how do I be fair to scripture and work through these types of questions that create angst in me? I even struggle with, how do I just live my life? Is it okay for me just to have a family night or to go on a vacation when you have a world that's in need of Jesus? The burden was so heavy on me at times. I just felt like the only thing I need to do with my life is just tell people about Jesus. how do I just have a life where I can do things like save some money, give some money away, go on a vacation? You know, how can I just spend some time with my family? How can I watch a movie, go to a concert? Like, I had to like rethink what this looks like, because again, I got put in a tight worldview at one time that, boy, you feel like you're doing something wrong if you, you know, do the simplest of pleasures, right? So did Jesus die for everybody? The problem of evil, all these things became very problematic. But one thing I'd answer as a last one, it would be, I struggled with the bizarre world of the Bible, in particular, some of the Old Testament stuff. Floating axe head, Ezekiel laying on his side for 390 days and then, you know, flipping over and giving God 100 plus more days. I didn't understand. I understood what the scripture was teaching about that, but I just thought how bizarre that is. Samson taking out, you know, all these people with a jawbone, and David, you know, taking out Goliath. And even that one, honestly, is not as nearly as bizarre as some of the other stories. And I had to think about that. Like, what do I do with, you know, a talking donkey? And how do I walk through that? Because I found myself preaching, and sometimes I'd be preaching and I'd be thinking, is anybody listening to this thinking this sounds as absurd as it does to me? And I'm preaching it. Well, what I would do is I would just acknowledge the absurdity. Like, sometimes that's the point. It is absurd that there's a talking ass, right?
Right, yeah.
I mean, that is absurd. But a parting sea, floating manna, the pillar of fire. I mean, there's a lot of stories. And I think that when we just say, you know what, this is hard to relate to, and I enter into that, now people are like, oh, wow, our pastor realizes that this is not normal, that manna falls from heaven.
There's a level of authenticity.
Exactly.
There, yeah.
But I didn't throw out the baby with the bathwater, but I do think I want to acknowledge what's bizarre. And then I had to come up with a hermeneutic for the bizarre, like the hermeneutic for some of the things like that. And I started thinking about a hermeneutic for the nonsense. Like, what are the things, why did God use some things that seem nonsensical? And what you see is there's this Jewish sub-theme throughout scripture that is one of the ways that God constantly meets his people. He meets us in the absurd, asks us to do things that don't make sense. And it's supposed to look like that. And that's part of the way that God meets us. But then when he meets us, it's a way that he reveals his identity. Like, he'll meet Moses at the Red Sea when everybody's just been angry. But when that Red Sea is parted, the absurd is done, people believe that Moses is the leader.
Definitely. Okay. Before we close, I want to talk about two groups of people, possible groups of people. One group of people that I want your insight on is this person that's saying, I don't want to go down that road. I don't want to dive in deep to my doubts. I don't want to start researching Christianity. I don't want to start looking for answers because I don't want to have to go through 3 years of intense doubt and looking for all of the different answers and all of these different questions and looking at all the different apologists and all the different philosophy and theology. What would you say to that person? So that's one. And then what would you say to this person that's maybe in the midst of that? They've gone through maybe some of those questions and now they're kind of where you were a few years ago. So let's start with the person that's saying, man, I don't even want to go there.
Well, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go there either. I mean, my reading and studies was rooted in, you know, I loved God and I want to know about God. And, you know, if we've got 66 books that are inspired from God to us, we should want to read it just because that's the greatest thing we can do, is be in a relationship with our Creator. The problem is along the way, if we're thinking we are going to have these questions, but we need to realize that God can use those questions to deepen us and he can grow us. And just because I had these doubts, it doesn't mean others will. In fact, there's lots of people, fortunately, that have had the same appetite for studies, and they have not had to slip into some of the doubts. I think, as I talk about in my writings on doubt, that there's a certain type of doubter that struggles with it more than the normal person. And this is what I call the obsessive analyzer. And that's what I am. I'm an obsessive analyzer. So you have some that are analytical. They're analyzers, but they're not obsessive. In other words, they know how to detach. They don't lock in and get stuck in this abyss. So think of like William Lane Craig. I think he's very analytical. He's an analyzer. He understands what it's like to have questions, obviously, and some doubts, yeah. But he's not somebody who's been on record saying he's been racked by doubts in the way that a Mike Lacona or maybe a Gary Habermas has struggled with in his life or myself. Right. And I think that perhaps William Lane Craig is very left brain. He's drawn to the science and mathematics, to the sciences and mathematics, argumentation. And I think people that are very strong left brain. Now, Bill, forgive me if I'm if I'm undermining your right brain mentality there, but I see you as very left brained in that way. Yet you do see some creative stuff with the children book idea. So, yeah. I mean, he's certainly drawn to that. But I think that there's something about Dr. Craig that doesn't seem like he has that obsessive, addictive type personality. Right. Then you get others that are obsessive, but they're not analytical. And so that OCD tendencies, they're very obsessive, but because they're not maybe analytical, they might not know really what to analyze. They might just be locked into something and not even be thinking about how to analyze out of it.
Right.
For me, I feel like it's both. And I'm a combination of very much left and right brain, a creative type yet, and a lot of times I think the people that can struggle with the doubts philosophically are your musicians, your artists, your creative types, the right brain, because the right brain, it doesn't know boundaries. It's always pushing the boundaries. And I have a lot of that. In fact, I was driven primarily by that in the first half of my life. The analytical side has been, the second half of my life, taming my right brain, right? But along the way, that I don't always know how to unlock. And I think that somebody out there that's in the midst of that, if they have that combination, then maybe they need to think about, what are they feeling called to, right? Everybody doesn't need to go down the path that I do, but maybe they would say, I'm going to take one topic and I'm going to run into deep waters with it so that I can be more equipped to influence people. And by the way, the questions we should be answering, if we don't have a lot of time for this, we should be answering the questions that people are asking in our culture today. Right. Figure out, write out on a piece of paper what questions are the most pressing for our culture today and, sharpen up in those questions. But I'd say that would be, if you're an obsessive analyzer, be careful because it can get tough.
I would say anybody that's on any one of those spectrums, and I appreciate every part of your story there, should pick up the book. It's called Doubting Toward Faith, The Journey to Confident Christianity. You can find a copy of that on oneminuteapologist.com/books. We've mentioned Gary Habermas a few times in this episode. He is someone that has written on the subject, and he actually read your book, and he gave this endorsement. It says, it was wonderful to see the multitude of insights, suggestions, and even the remedies that are found in this text, all at different levels as well. On top of everything else, the volume is well-written, a quick read. If you know Bobby, which I do, you're probably not surprised. No, we're not surprised at all. So I would encourage anybody that's anywhere on that spectrum of doubt, questionings, to check out the books. Final thoughts on anything?
Well, you wanted me to answer the second question.
Sure.
Is how do we deal with those who, that they're not in the place where they're worried about going into answering
right.
All these questions because they don't want the doubts, but then you have somebody who's in it. And I think just practically speaking, I would say, hey, don't give up on this. It is tough. You're not alone. People doubted in the Bible. People have doubted throughout church history. Charles Spurgeon had his doubts. Billy Graham had his doubts. Some of the people we've talked about on this program have had their doubts. And you can find your way through it. And I would just say, practically speaking, identify your doubts. Write them down on a piece of paper. Just start writing all the doubts you have down. And then begin to group your doubts. You all group them from all these doubts and try to find macro categories. And what you'll find is a lot of the questions you're writing down are micro doubts that could fall under a macro heading. So these sub-doubts that are under the problem of evil, the macro heading is the problem of evil. And then you'll start going, hey, you know what? I've got three or four big issues, and look at the big issues and take your time with it. And so hopefully that would just help you pray your way through and realize at the end of the day, the way we get through is it's like a little child. We become like little children. And that's what I had to do. I had to do a round trip, humble myself by becoming like a little child again, and realizing I had to go back to the basics, to the way I got into this, and I had to renegotiate my faith stance and realize that I'm in a love relationship with God, and I was trying to conquer him by trying to figure everything out, and instead of trying to conquer God, I need to embrace my finitude. And finally, I'd just say, we need to remember that doubt's not a Christian problem. It's a human problem, and in the absence of certainty, there'll always be room for doubts. The question is, which worldview best closes the doubt gap? And this is where I believe Christianity really begins to walk.
With that, see you next week.